Coming up on Patriots This Week, Mile High proved to be a primetime low for the Patriots.
We had plenty of opportunity out there, but it just wasn't our night.
After squandering the lead, all of New England gasped when the league's unmatchable weapon tumbled to the turf.
Gronkowski is hit from behind by Darian Stewart, and he's writhing in pain.
Nearly broken, but unbound, an arm and a leg got the Patriots to overtime. But it was a Bronco who busted the Patriots' winning streak.
I have all the respect in the world for this football team, the way they competed.
Now the Eagles get ready to land in Foxborough, and the Patriots are ready to start another mission.
I've calmed down a little bit. We've moved on from that game. You know, we're facing a great opponent this week in the Eagles.
Now it's time for Patriots This Week.
It took the Broncos overtime lengths to beat the shorthanded Patriots and knock New England from the ranks of the unbeaten. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Patriots This Week. Bob Soucy with my radio partner, former Pats quarterback Scott Zolak, and a three-time Super Bowl champion in Matt Chatham. And, guys, speaking of the performance on Sunday night by the Pats, falling 30-24 in overtime. New England in control that game, 21-7 into the fourth quarter. But as mentioned, the Patriots were shorthanded. They went in with a lot of injuries already. No Edelman, no Amendola, no Lewis, no Collins. And during the course of play, they lose Hightower and Gronkowski.
And no fair catch. I mean, you throw that in the mix, and I think you could lose seven of your eight starters, be down as many guys as they did. Gronkowski came after the muff punt, but that's a 21-7 game. Start of the fourth quarter, and you're getting ready to get that ball back at about midfield. You fair catch that. I think the game flipped at that point. Denver kind of went in panic mode. They weren't under center. They were in shotgun. So then it was, oh, wow, we're down two scores. Patriots are up 14 points in the fourth quarter. We need to throw it every play. You flipped it. The game became one-dimensional for them. And then you gave them life. You gave them the ball at midfield. The running game came back into play. The next thing you know, they punch it in. We got a ball game.
Yeah, I agree that that was certainly a turning point. I really looked at Dante Hightower as really the biggest loss. And that's not to say that we know Rob Gronkowski is one of the best offensive players in football, but we saw their ability to still move the ball once he was out, right? When Hightower left, the group of linebackers was pretty inexperienced. And because you don't have Collins in there, it just made it so the run fits were a little goofy and something that had been a strength in the first half. I mean, they were stopping the run cold. It was back to making it a Brock Osweiler show, and it was that. Right. There's not as much of a concern. When it became about run fits and these stretch plays where they pull you all in one direction and you overstep a gap by just a little bit and they become 22-yard runs, it became a major issue.
How about the Patriots' offense as we backtrack to the start? They open up and they throw the ball consistently, even without so many weapons for Tom Brady, and they move the ball downfield and strike first.
Yeah, and they have found Gronkowski on the outside. Everybody was involved in the passing game, and I think the offensive line, for the most part, the best thing they did in this game, we kind of nailed it before. We talked about this throughout the course of the week. You take your best tackle forward. You stick him on the backside. I think that ease, number 12, gave him confidence to sit tighter in that pocket, hold that ball for a little bit more, make the good throw. You flip Fleming Cannon to that front side, and then you shake things up. Stork started to take over at the center position. I think you maximized everything from David Andrews, and they've kind of flipped the script here and went with Stork at center.
And for much of the game, Matt, complimentary football is evidenced by that first score. Defense with a stop, good field position, Patriots strike. Patriots, again, set up with good field position, really for the better part of that contest, getting a great effort by punter Ryan Allen, the defense playing well, as you've noted, building that two-touchdown lead.
I thought the one, air quotes, complementary element that was missing was run game. And I think in the absence of that, you can get stops on one side and production on the other, but at some point you're going to have to run the football. And for whatever reason, that element seems to be gone right now. But when there's a pass play that you don't like, usually the recourse is, well, let's run a different pass play. When there's a run play that doesn't work, people say don't run. And that, to me, is never the answer. It's run something different. There are other scheme runs that I think fit their personnel. Their biggest issue now is finding the ones that they can be successful at and running the heck out of it.
Bill Belichick downplayed weather conditions after the fact, but how much do you think the conditions in the snow in Denver factored into the play calling and the decision toward the end of the half, still with all their timeouts at their avail, not to push for more points before the break?
I think it's a combination. I think it's conditions, and I think it was personal. I think they didn't want to do anything silly, give up a sack, strip sack, ball security, give some sort of a turnover to give Denver life there before the half.
Everybody's harping on the officiating during the course of the game, and especially the offensive pass interference calls against Rob Gronkowski, continuing trend. We're going to talk a lot more about officiating in the second segment of the show. But that particular call, how much of a game changer was it, as well as a later call on Patrick Chung away from a sack by Alan Branch?
I think the Gronkowski thing reverberates through the sideline because he's a big part of what you want to target, but then this sort of seed of doubt comes in that can we target him? Because every defensive back is going to contact him, and in contacting him, they're going to bounce off. So it's almost an unwinnable fight. I think you have to be scared. Can we go back to this guy? Can we continue to even run those routes? It's getting called unfairly so, and I think the best example of the officiating inconsistency on this particular issue is the Chung hold at the end of the game. You watch Demaryius Thomas. He extends and pushes away far more than Rob Gronkowski did in any of his OPI calls. The issue is we're calling it on Gronk. We're not calling it on everyone else.
Yeah, and I've talked to Devin McCourty about this. He's like, we get more of this on nine routes where guys push off more so than what Gronkowski's doing. He's being unfairly targeted. I've talked to two people close to the team. The quarterback said it in his radio interview this week that assistant coaches, the head coach, meet with the league on a regular basis. It's weekly. It's obviously an issue. It's a game killer. That was a first down. You pick it up. You get a new set of downs. You run the clock out. Now, all of a sudden, offensive PI, you're backed up another 10 yards. Kind of screws you as far as how you're going to call the game. They got O's the other night, and there's no other two ways to look at it.
Real quickly, this is something that I think at home you might be thinking, hey, this sounds conspiratorial. They don't target players. Other people might, you know, think that. No, they don't target players. It's a real thing, folks. It's a real thing. It had happened to me in my career. I stood in the box on a punt return play, and throughout the course of a game, I had the back judge tell me, I'm just watching you today, Chatham. I've seen you on film, blah, blah, blah. There was something I was doing in the way I was blocking they wanted to take away. It got in my head. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
it's unfair.
And offensive coordinator Josh McDaniel says Rob doesn't extend his arms very often. And the Patriots, of course, can point to the five offensive pass interference penalties accepted against Gronkowski, plus one that was offsetting.
There's one against
Miami. And
that's
more than every other team in the NFL.
Yeah, we looked at them all this year. And there's one against Miami where he got into the end zone and he literally threw the guy and pushed the guy back into. That's offensive pass interference when he initiates the contact. The second a defender initiates contact, engages him. It's fair play after that.
The other thing is extension, as you mentioned. If it's a chicken wing, it's nothing.
You saw Brady.
If you extend away, you're
saying,
can't do
that. we're flipping. He's not pushing on.
What do you want him to do? Run like a bowling pin and just get hit? I mean, he has to put his arms up.
Tape his hands up or something.
Right? Yeah. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Maybe among the most disappointing aspects of this game, a valiant effort by the Patriots, is how well the secondary had played up until the last few minutes and in overtime, of course. Osweiler, long pass to Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders against Malcolm Butler and Logan Ryan, who were terrific all night long.
I thought Logan Ryan made one of your better receivers in the league, one of the more expensive receivers, absolutely quick. And that's a big one right there for him. For him to shut down in that game where he's not fighting through the ball, coming back on hook routes, competing. Demaryius Thomas did not compete in that football game. I give Logan Ryan credit for shutting him down.
Yeah, and again, I think Malcolm had a competitive day as well, and it's worth mentioning Chung. I think he got screwed on that call in the end zone, but he also did a great job of not making Vernon Davis a story. I mean, I think he's something that the Broncos have been pushing. They've been talking about in weeks of conversations, you know, we got to get this guy involved. We got to get this guy involved. And in a week where they know you're thin, especially at the linebacker position with no Jamie Collins, I think they wanted him.
His game's done. I mean, you watched Vernon Davis the other night. You know, is this going to be a resurgence in his career? He doesn't have a burst. He's not the same guy he was. Sorry. He's a former Maryland Terp. Well, I root for those guys, man. Fear the turtle. But not happening with him.
And if you thought officiating was a topic of conversation after Sunday night, wait till you hear our next segment coming up on Patriots This Week.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments, a proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. By Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. And by Waste Management, remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of. Waste Management's new Bagster, dumpster in a bag, can take it on.
This week, the Putnam Player Spotlight is on Alan Branch. Undrafted out of Michigan, Branch has been in the NFL for 9 years, and in his second season in New England, the 6'6", 350-pounder has been a force in the middle of the Patriots' line. Branch was a key contributor against Denver, chipping in with 4 tackles and deflecting 2 of Brock Osweiler's passes in Denver. The Putnam Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
Welcome back inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. Patriots This Week continues, as does the Pats schedule of the Philadelphia Eagles. And speaking of schedules, one was changed for the officiating crew now assigned to this game. Reportedly, Pete Morelli and his crew of officials were set to do the Monday night game between Dallas and Washington. And guys, this much troubled crew, which has been in the news a lot lately, has been reassigned to the Patriots and the Eagles.
Yeah, and I mean, where do we start here? I mean, I think we go back to last week with Tony Corrente. And, you know, we're watching that game, Bob. We're seeing the course of that game develop and how it's trending. And then you find out that Tony froze up pretty much when the conditions really got dire in that second half. And there was no communication between he and the sideliner, Brady. And Brady looks at him. He's got that vacant stare. I think he's a 64-year-old man sitting out there in those conditions. Pete Morelli, 64-year-old man. And I'm not an ageist where you're against older people working. The game has changed to a point where it's not what it was when these guys first came into the league. And I really don't think that they could keep up with the pace. And I think new rules and how it benefits the offense where when the ball's in flight, it's either a holding call, an arm bar, a hook call, pass interference, hands to the face. There's so many things in play that you've increased the odds of human error. And I think that's a big issue in the league. And the integrity of the game stinks from the officiating standpoint.
74 new ways to earn a parking ticket. That's essentially what it is. You go out there.
Sum that up right there.
You go out there and you don't just fight the other team. You have to beat the rule book as well. And I think that's the biggest problem. You actually mentioned Corrente. I mean, before even getting to Morelli, Corrente's first words that he spoke in the game, other than the coin toss, was to screw up the Cameron Fleming eligible issue.
And that's who Cameron reports to. That's the scary part of it.
And you can see it on camera, him staring at him for a long 3 seconds.
And all 11 guys are like, he reported. And the sideline went absolutely
nuts.
And
your head referee doesn't. The point is, these guys aren't very good. And, I mean, in our profession, when you're not very good, you're gone. Somehow they're not. In this case, and you understand, so back to the Morelli issue. They've had a bad week. How do you punish someone? You send them to cover the defending champions.
On a 4:30 game.
Are you kidding me?
And this is a crew that's had a lot of bad weeks, going back to the divisional round of the playoffs last year. Dallas against Detroit. Actually, the wild card round of the playoffs last year. Dallas versus Detroit.
The Pettigrew penalty.
The Pettigrew pass interference call that was
crazy.
Eventually overruled. Communication seems to be as much of a problem, as you alluded to, as incompetence. Bill Belichick was upset, it seemed, based on some of his comments after the fact, again, that the communication about the excess timeout could have been better.
Well, and that's the problem, is when he clicked that mic, and that's why I flipped in the booth. Like, how do you issue an excess timeout without explaining the rule when the other team doesn't have the timeout? And plus, when you do that, you don't communicate it to the sideline, you've got to tell New England, hey, you're accepting this penalty. It's a penalty, but I am going to start the clock. That was never communicated with the sideline. The quarterback, the head coach, the offensive staff thought, okay, it's a dead ball foul. They screwed up. You know, they got the defender that's hurt. Why are we winding the clock here?
It's his job to communicate clearly what's going on. Imagine a phrase like this. I murdered a burrito.
Why are you going to bring murder in it?
The point is, the second half of the phrase is really important. You can't communicate, we're in a timeout, and not say the other half of the rule that things are going to roll on my thing. I murdered a burrito.
Where'd
is a much different
from?
Story.
Was it from Moe's?
But that's for Moe's. Yeah. But it's a different story.
Being in the
crate
business.
Potential, yeah. But the point of it is, the second half's the most important part. You can't stop short. Right. You can't stop short on we're in a timeout and then roll the clock and not tell anyone.
Well, speaking of timeouts, let's communicate to the audience. We've got to take a scheduled timeout, not an excess timeout, on Patriots This Week.
All right, time now for your Zoe Show. It's the Philadelphia Eagles, and what we're going to talk about is an expensive running back. $12 million a year for DeMarco Murray. But why? He's pretty darn good, I'll tell you this. But here's your read option. And if you're a defensive end, if you're Chandler Jones, Rob Ninkovich, stay on the back, because Sam Bradford's not going to run it. If it's Mark Sanchez, he's not going to run it. This guy's going to run it. And if you watch the Denver game from last week, you'll remember the big runs came on the 19-yard touchdown and the one to seal it in overtime. Read option right here. Don't even stay at home for the quarterback. Focus on the running back, close it down, and get guys like Alan Branch and Malcolm Brown involved in the middle. But you got to watch this, and it's a good thing that we have Jamie Collins hopefully back on Sunday. Number 91 should match up pretty good with DeMarco Murray coming out of the backfield. So find number 29, pound him, beat him into the ground. There's your Zoe Show.
The Zoe Show is brought to you by Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
We're back in the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios looking ahead to the Pats and the Eagles this Sunday afternoon. Guys, the Eagles have given up 90 points in their last two games. Mark Sanchez and the offense ineffective. Philadelphia's 4-7 when it looked like they were about to turn the corner. Maybe take control of that NFC East.
Yeah, don't sleep on Sanchez here. Don't look at and say, okay, he has poor footing, which, you know, he doesn't seem to fit that scheme. I remember Mark Sanchez coming in here a couple times and beating us. So the guy has some familiarity with the building. But can he get in there and manage a read option? Like, you know, we looked at it on the Zoe show, DeMarco Murray. When they run that read option, you're in the back. You got two quarterbacks that do not want to run. They're just going to sit there and hand the ball off, and they're going to do their play fake and then get ready for the spread.
When I see Chip Kelly's offense, there's a lot of sort of boom or bust in the plays that he puts out there. We know the guys like Sproles and like Murray can hit it on a big play, but he has been running sideways, much like college offenses do, where there's these plays where Murray is stretching. He literally will run 10 yards that way before he ever gets to make a downhill cut. That works at Oregon because at Oregon you stretch them, and at some point the superior.
But what if it's Freeney? What if it's Fleming?
And
what
if, yeah. The superior athlete is able to then hit that gap once it sort of materializes. He's had so many issues this year where stretch, and the other athletes are just as good and they catch it. Front four, the Eagles defense is playing exceptionally. The offense is starting to run the ball downhill, and they're not turning the football over. Now they're running sideways. Now they're turning the football over, and the front four isn't playing as well. Not a very good team.
Plus, Matthews, the other back, has been injured.
Yeah.
Ertz, the talented young tight end, has been injured. The line is certainly decimated for the Eagles
right.
by some of Chip Kelly's own decisions, plus some injuries this year. Yeah. So the offense is a quick-paced offense that's having short possessions, three and outs. The defense is on the field a long time, and they're giving up 500 yards per game the last couple of weeks.
I think one of the bigger things internally they're likely dealing with is we all saw this. It was a Thanksgiving game. You know, they're on the big stage. It looked like they had lost effort. I mean, and I don't like to say guys quit, but I saw people pull off hits towards the end zone.
Questioning,
I saw things,
play calling, all that stuff,
yeah,
openly, doing it in interviews.
It's a chaotic situation. So clearly New England had a loss the week ago. This is a week where they're really looking to bounce back. I think this is the perfect team that's teetering a bit that they can really take a bite out.
And you got Coach Belichick, who has an immense amount of respect for Chip Kelly.
How much of a factor would it be if you're a player, if your head coach already is being scrutinized, maybe within, but certainly on the outside, and then he's dealing with questions about potentially leaving for
USC,
a college job?
Yeah.
I think to your point, is it disruptive in the locker room? It's a weird locker room because there was that segment where people were still sort of agreeing with what McCoy was saying out of house, and that was an earlier season thing. Then offensive lineman, you know, Mathis, who we just saw a week ago, is now out of the building, and this guy's not keeping our guys. There's race questions, which weren't legitimate, but the point is too many distractions. And I think they're at a point now where when you want to be a good football team, you really, really have to believe in what the direction that your guy has, and maybe that's not the case now. We don't know it in depth enough, but I think it's an interesting issue when you see the performance they put out there on Thanksgiving.
One would think Philadelphia should be a desperate football team this Sunday. As for the Patriots, they're trying to get healthy again and looking to get back on the winning track. The guys will tell you how they'll do on Sunday against the Eagles right after this.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments. You, your advisor, and Putnam. Pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
Broncos wideout Emmanuel Sanders seems to have good chemistry with new quarterback Brock Osweiler. Make sure Sanders is in your starting lineup against a weak Charger secondary in San Diego this week. But sit Sammy Watkins. The Bills receiver will have a tough time at home against a resurgent Houston Texans defense. You won't be blue if you start Alfred Blue. The Houston running back has had consecutive solid performances in the last 2 weeks. Expect another one against the Bills. This week's fantasy update is brought to you by Verizon. Come home to a better network.
Welcome back inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. Final words of Patriots This Week. First word on Sunday's outcome.
First word on Sunday's outcome. How about this? I'm going to go 34-13. So I'm a 21-point win for New England. They get back on track here. My game changer is going to be Logan Ryan. I think the secondary, based on how they're going to flip the script and Philly's going to have to throw, Logan Ryan, two interceptions on Sunday.
I'm going to go Patriots 30-10. I think it's going to be a comfortable game as well. But I'm going to go Brandon LaFell as my player of the game for this reason. I think think we've seen where weeks where he wasn't the first read, because even last week with all the other decimation, Gronk was still there. He's not now. Brandon gets to be the first read. He'll have a high target game.
All right, Matt Chatham, Scott Zolak, thanks as always, guys, and thank you for joining us. Of course, the Patriots and the Eagles, Sunday afternoon at 4:25. For the guys, Bob Soucy, saying so long for now.